There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential, and the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of.
I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train. Search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
Ladies and gentlemen. Podcasting since 2005. You are listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts Godfrey, Pete Rock, Paris, Pasta.
I have one less club. Come on.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 508. This is your host Danny, aka Godfrey, and this week, of course, we have Patrick in the house. Patrick, what's up?
What's up, y'all? Party time. I feel good. A lot of energy. I feel like discussing some things because we have gotten so much feedback and voicemails and emails from people with a lot of really interesting questions.
Yeah,
and
we're going to be awesome. Doing that. Yeah, this whole episode is just that. The majority
this
of it.
This is the fans. Thank you for writing and sending us voicemails. We very much appreciate it.
And also, we have Pete in the house. Pete.
What's up?
Wow. Why you sound so...
Wow, man.
No, we got a lot of fan mail, so I got to get the deep voice going.
That's true. Are you prepared? Because in the past few episodes, you were kind of not 100%. You're confident you're gonna make this right.
I got it, man. I got the fan mail.
All right. Okay. Head over to gamertagradio.com, post your comments and feedback, or go to play.it and make sure to share it with your friends. Spread the word, all that good stuff, and let them know about Gamertag Radio releasing 2 episodes every week. Give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Emails, fanmail@gamertagradio.com. But this is a special episode because this is all about fan mail, my favorite part of the show. So let's do this. Fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
Fan mail.
And yes, that was Pete. The voice sounded a little bit better. But if you think he could do better, let us know.
The next time I get sick, I'm stealing your thunder, Pete.
Yes. Yeah. So which one we should go first, guys? First question, voicemail or email?
Voicemail?
All right, let's go with voicemail.
Sure,
which one
it.
You... Yeah, I know it's a lot.
There's a lot of them.
Should we go with... I like this one. With Cicero. Great question from Cicero. All right, so Cicero from Spawn On Me podcast. We're going to play it right now.
Gamertag Radio crew, congratulations on 500 episodes. Congratulations on 10 years. This is Cicero Holmes, a.k.a. Stubby Stan of the Spawn On Me podcast. And I've been inspired to kind of give you guys some listener feedback, long time, first time. I want to respond to episode 501. There was a talk about, not Destiny, it was Destiny Talk Radio, but there was a talk about between Danny and Paulston about the Nintendo NX and a response to a listener's question about an optical drive and how it's dumb for the optical drive to be removed. And I want to first address that guy and say that Nintendo consoles don't use optical drives for anything other than gaming anyway. So it's not a big deal that they're gone. You could play a DVD on your Wii U, on your Wii, after you inserted stuff and did that kind of thing. But people don't use Wii's for watching movies, and just in general, people don't use physical media anymore. Barely are people buying Blu-rays, barely are people even buying books. Everything you get nowadays is digital. I haven't seen a CD in, I don't know, this decade, probably. The world is going digital, the world is going streaming, so you kind of have to get used to that. And then, you know, if you want to use optical drives for different things, then you keep devices around that have optical drives. The other thing I want to address is Poston saying that he believes that the next generation will have optical drives from Nintendo, from Microsoft and from Sony. And I want to do, on your show, you guys have Miss Cleo, but on our show, we have hashtag Stubnostications. And a hashtag Stubnostication for you, Patrick, is that there will be no optical drives in the next generation. This is the last generation of optical drives. We're not going to see them anymore. They're just a waste of space. They're a waste of energy. And they're a waste of money. We will not see digital. We will not see physical media drives anymore. Optical drives are a thing of the past. They are a dinosaur. They will be gone, especially by the time the next generation of consoles will hit the shelves. The question that I have for you guys is, let's expound upon what you think the options are for the all digital future and the reselling of licenses back to the community or back to the manufacturers of the software. Will we see services like EA Access where you can be part of their club? You pay 10 or 20 bucks a year and they give you, you know, 30% of whatever the cost of the game was as a credit, or you get it back from the console manufacturer. Like, you know, how do you think that will work in the future? Do you think that's something that is viable, and what do you think the service would be? Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one. So most people say goodbye, but in Bricago, we say peace.
So what are your thoughts, Patrick? He was basically calling you out.
He did call me out. Cicero, respect your opinion. I will defend mine. I do believe we will have optical drives on the PS5 and the next Xbox, just because there still are a crap ton of people that use physical media for those systems. I could be wrong, but I'm going to go ahead and stake my little flag in the sand. I think this is what's going to happen, just because that's just how technology works. You can't just force everybody into a new system just like that. But again, something amazing technology hardware wise could happen the next couple of years before these new systems comes out. Mm-hmm. That, you know, completely makes it justifiable. It's like, oh, wow, we don't need, you know, DVDs and Blu-rays anymore, because, you know, the streaming has gotten extremely fast. You know, the internet, you know, maybe your cable or internet provider is, you know, eased up on the throttling, is giving you more access, higher download speeds, you're able to stream more things, you know. So maybe we can see ideas that used to be like on live, you know, which, you know, ended up not working. Maybe things like that can come back because the internet's faster, the streaming is faster. And, you know, we aren't as dependent on the physical media. But I do think, you know, the used game market plays a factor in this. The entertainment industry plays a factor in this. Investors and shareholders definitely play a factor in this. We will have Blu-rays for at least one more generation. I'm pretty positive on that. That said, Nintendo's NX, though, all bets are off. I think they should go full digital, because I agree with this point, you know, because a lot of people, you know, they don't use their Wii for anything but gaming. You may use it for Netflix, but everybody uses something for Netflix these days. But in terms of pure gaming, Nintendo's first parties is probably the strongest out there, and it looks like they're showing no signs of slowing down. More power to them. They can go for it, because I think they'll probably also have the Wii U and whatever 3DS evolves into as accessories to that. We've already heard Sony say that they're not going to have another handheld, that the Vita kind of is dead, and they're not going to innovate in that. So, you know, now that Nintendo dominates the handheld territory, it's just consoles for Microsoft and Sony now. And I just don't think they would alienate, I would say, a pretty sizable number base of people that would not buy that system because they only have to buy digital games now. That's what I'm thinking.
I know he also asked a question about the whole licensing thing. What are your thoughts about that? Pete, you want to answer that? Or
I can't see why that would be a bad idea from just a business perspective.
Makes sense, right?
I mean, I know we talked about it last week, or in the last episode, with how GameStop is pretty much predicating their future business on the hope that being able to sell used games is still a viable, you know, is still a viable business model. With everything moving towards discless, I don't know how much longer a company like GameStop that predicates itself on not just selling that disc based game, but the return potential of reselling, you know, used games is, you know, it's a major part of their income. So it'll be interesting. I think if something successful were to be done, I think it's a good idea to give some of that back to the manufacturer or back to the developers. Like, if I know CD Projekt Red, you know, they're their own distributor, et cetera, but somebody like an EA where you've got people working on games and you kind of get royalties for games, whether it's bought new or used, kind of similar to, and I don't know in the film industry, if people are, if actors and, you know, people that work in Hollywood get royalties based on sold, like on based on used movies or TV shows. So be interesting to see how that all would work out. If that's even a viability. Mm.
I know, Patrick, we have another question. We have so many, but, we should play next?
Let's go to the PC gaming question.
Yeah. Ooh. You take that one up.
All right. I believe that's directed to UPN Paris.
Yeah, that's a voicemail that was left regarding PC gaming. So Danny, go ahead and hit play and we'll cover that one as soon as it's done.
All right.
Hey, Gamertag Radio. This is John Bonvillian from Venice, Louisiana. New caller here. Just finished listening to episode 506. It was a great review of The Taken King. I've been really taking my time with it, and for good reason. Anyways, my question to Paris and Pete Rock. I've gotten into PC gaming in mid-August and loving the hell out of it. What games are you looking to get for PC in the next coming months, whether it be multiplats or exclusive? I know for sure I'll be getting Fallout 4, just to get an idea for future games I would look into to build on my new PC system. Thanks, and keep doing what you do.
All right, so we're back. First of all, Pete, before you answer that question, I have a special audio from Paris just for this question. So we're going to play it right now.
Hey, John, thank you for the voicemail. Wish I could have been on the episode, but to answer your PC questions. So just like you, I'm looking forward to Fallout 4. I think that has a very high chance of being the game of the year for 2015. I'm also looking forward to a game which I don't think is coming in 2015. I believe this is 2016. It's a game called Firewatch. It's in first-person mode, but it's an adventure game set in the 80s, I do believe. Go look that up online. It looks pretty interesting. So looking forward to that. Like I've talked about previously, I'm going to pick up Metal Gear Solid 5 most likely during the Steam winter sale. Looking forward to checking that out. I'm also looking forward to getting Grand Theft Auto 5 on the PC. I'm looking forward to getting Cities Skylines and its expansion that's about to come out. And I'm also looking forward to the Witcher 3 expansions that will be coming out here pretty soon. I mean, and as we move into 2016, I've not made up my mind 100% yet if I will get Tomb Raider on the Xbox One or if I'll just wait it out until 2016 and pick it up on Windows 10. But those are the games that I can think of right off the top of my head that I'm looking forward to. I'm sure there's going to be others. You're getting into PC gaming, which can be an exciting time. My best advice to you, wait on that Steam winter sale. You're going to find a lot of PC games at a great discount, and that'll jumpstart your PC gaming experience. Hope that answers your question. I'll give it back to the guys, and hopefully I'll be back on GTR next week. Talk to you soon.
All right, Pete, what about you? What's your response?
Depending on when exactly you get your game when you exactly build out or receive your gaming PC, if it's in the next month, Fallout 4, I think is the big monster. Moving into 2016, I'd probably say Overwatch from Blizzard. I've been, you know, looking forward to that for a while now. I was hoping to see something at E3, but they didn't. But they did do something at GDC, a month or two ago. Okay. Dreadnought is another game that I'm looking forward to from Jaeger. That's a first person shooter, but it's not a human first person shooter. It's kind of like a space battle type game. It looks really, really cool. The particle effects on that game is amazing. So I think if that's your thing, that could be something. Dirty Bomb from Splash Damage is another game I'm looking forward to. It's similar to like a Rainbow Six first person PvP type game. And then the one that I think everybody in the PC gaming, realm is really, really looking forward to. And it's almost like the detox from Dr. Dre, but he did pop out with Compton this year. So I don't know. There is hope. Cyberpunk 2077 from CD Projekt Red.
Oh, right. Man. Like, that game doesn't even exist yet, but like, just that concept trailer just got me. Oh, wow. Deus Ex on steroids almost.
Right. And then I guess, just because I said that, I have to throw in Half-Life 3. But again, that's the unicorn. And,
play it safe and say Portal 3? That is an actual thing.
There's a better chance for Portal 3 than I think freaking Half-Life 3 or Cyberpunk 2077.
And I want Half-Life 3 probably more than anybody out there. I'm almost cussed again. I love Half-Life 1 and 2 so much, but they're smart. They know they can't make the game that we want. And it's honestly, it's better to have it as that what if in our imagination. But that said, once Oculus Rift and Morpheus and all that is like standard, everyone has that. Yes, please make Half-Life 3 to make it just like the best ultimate experience VR ever. Then I'm all on board, but you might as well wait. Wait for the technology to like get even more awesome. Why settle?
Your season-long fantasy football team may be going strong, but you don't have to wait until week 16 to get paid. Put your fantasy skills to the test every week this season at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. With one-week fantasy, there are no season-long commitments. Got an injured player? No problem. It's like a new season every week, so you're never stuck with the same players. And get this, DraftKings is crowning a new millionaire every week with this season. That means you could turn your love of football into the pay day of a lifetime. Just pick your players, pile up the points, pick up your cash. That's it. Believe me, you've never experienced football like this before. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Folks, we've been saying it all season. DraftKings.com is a fantastic site. You don't have to be locked into a season-long fantasy football league. Every week is a new opportunity to win cash. So hurry to DraftKings.com now. Use promo code GAMERTAG and play for free with your first deposit in this Sunday's $1 million fantasy football contest, where first place takes home $100,000. Enter GAMERTAG for free entry now only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so I have this question came directly from Twitter, and his name is Bruce. Shout out to Bruce. Thanks for tweeting this question. He was like, hey, Godfrey, what was the hardest part of building a fan base for Gamertag Radio? To me, I think people not giving us a chance to like listen to the podcast just because we're not one of those like popular or maybe mainstream podcasts. So that means we have to be working even harder to get that attention from people. Once you see those people that are just still supporting, those that are always in the top 10, top 5. Like if you check out a lot of these gaming blogs that talk about podcasts, they always mention the same names over and over and over again. And if you see our name, it's pretty rare, maybe because of the content that we release, like an interview or something, but I like when people just give us a chance, listen to our show and tell us, are we good or not? And, because of us working really, really hard, we have our community that support us no matter what, and they love our content. And look, ever since we made this announcement that we're going to be releasing, two episodes per week, every week, a lot of people got excited that listened to GTR, So that's the hardest part, man. Just people not giving us a chance because we're not one of those popular or mainstream podcasts. That's it, So, Patrick, pick a voicemail. Go for it.
Let's go with Quentin's voicemail, number 4.
Number 4. And let me play it right about now.
All right, so this is Quentin from Oklahoma. I called, I left a message. It cut me off. So I'm going to try to keep it short and sweet this time and get straight to the point. I kind of got a little long-winded in the last message, or the last call. Anyway, so the point is, anybody who's complaining And this is in regards to the whole Nintendo NX not having an optical drive situation. Anybody who's complaining about a game of a future of gaming where all sales are digital, you might as well stop playing games now. Listen, Steam sells millions of copies of all these games all the time. A lot of these multi-platform games that are coming out are sold on Steam and probably sell more copies on Steam than they do anywhere else. The fact of the matter is, some people complain about not having the ability to trade games and this, that, together. And it's honestly the point that you should be thinking about is, how do we get games cheaper? That way you don't have to worry about trading those games in. Well, when you take the expenses out of the developers and the publishers' hands that they have, such as shipping games and creating this and things like that, you actually give, you know, them the incentive to reduce the cost of the games that, you know, they put out. It's just simple mathematics, you know, expenses or, you know, sales minus expenses equals profit. And that's why we have this huge DLC situation that we do now as well, because these publishers and these developers need profit. So when you start to reduce the cost that they have to put out, you start actually seeing the change in what, you know, the market could sell the games at. I just believe. I also do believe, you know, how Danny was saying that, you know, games used to not have a consistent price model. You know, games could cost whatever they wanted and the developers wanted them to cost. I think they should probably go back to that as well. And that makes more sense when you consider the amount of work that goes into some of the games. Grand Theft Auto should not cost $60. That game is amazing. That game should cost $100. And I would pay $100 to play it. I actually bought the collector's edition myself. But the point is, when you give these developers the tools to make the games at a cheaper cost, you actually give yourself the ability to buy better games at a cheaper price. So that's just my opinion and my two cents. Let me know what you guys think. If you play this on the show, that'd be great.
So that question is very interesting, man. Taking it back to the old school days with the crazy random pricing in games.
Exactly. I mean, and your mom would be like, how much does that game cost? And you're like, but it's so good. And that was a rough time for gaming. But I think it was important because it helped kind of figure out what we think a game is worth. And then we got that $50 standardized pricing that was around for a long time and then hit $60. We all kind of like, $60 for a game. And then we're all used to it now again.
Yeah.
For me, I'm going to have to disagree on his suggestion of going back to the non-standardized pricing, because I just think that is a holdover of when gaming was considered a fad and not the mainstream mega titan that it is now. I think it's important for games to have, for at least gamers to have an idea of what a game should cost, and then, you know, relying on that, you know, if I can get $60 together, I can get a new game. But I think what augments that is the importance of the digital only games now that, you know, can be competitive with the smaller price tag. You know, Steam is the best example of this, is like they move units like crazy because they can have all of these sales because the publisher and developers sign off of them, because they know that's good publicity for them. When people see, oh wow, that thing is half off, 75% off, I gotta get that, you're more likely to stick with that company, follow what they're doing, and probably pick up their next thing, maybe at full price, because you've successfully lured somebody in by saying, hey, you know, if you never tried this before, it's super cheap, the new one's going to come out soon, or we have this crazy new IP we're going to be putting out pretty soon, try our older games first, see if you like our style of, you know, game design. Mm-hmm. That's why I love the Steam's marketplace. I wish the Xbox and the PlayStation and Nintendo could adapt that idea of, you don't have to be completely dependent on what your peers are doing. I think there's still a huge space for AAA video games, you know, the multi-million dollar budgets, the $60, you know, season passes and DLC are here to stay, you know, we're not going to get rid of them. But for people, you know, that, you know, are that middle of the road gamer, you have a team, you're a small dev passion team, you have a great idea, you want to make it a reality. Having that, you know, flexible price structure, I think, is very important, because then you're allowing the consumers to say, you know, okay, you know, here's our feedback. You know, they can say, we think that's a bit too much. I mean, they can go re-examine, you know, what their game is, add more content. Is this worth $40? Is this worth $30? I think that's better, in my opinion, than going back to the idea of just publishers just willy-nilly decide, you know, like his example was good. I mean, you know, he would pay $100 for Grand Theft Auto 5 because he has that much fun with it. And I would agree. I probably got maybe $200 worth of, you know, that hypothetical value out of that game, how much I played it. But I think that $60 is important because there's a large amount of people that aren't the hardcore would be intimidated by that unusual pricing structure if it returned. Because, you know, it was confusing for a kid. It was very confusing. You know, you had to rely on asking for things for Christmas, you know, trying to convince your parents or convince yourself to be like, wow, this game is 60. This game is 80. This game's $110. You know, what does that even mean? And back then you didn't even have, like, you know, the internet wasn't such a great tool for figuring out, you know, what's what, you know, doing your research. That's important these days. But I think having the middle of the road and the cheaper games is very important because it allows growth in the industry. And Steam and PC gaming is very alive, very healthy with that idea. I would love for consoles would embrace that going forward because there's a lot of cool experiences that are still only limited to PC that you couldn't tell people on console about.
I got to jump in and battle you.
No, go in.
Oh, no, here go.
Just because, all right, so I know GOG is doing they're doing this like 33% off on Wolfenstein, and we're talking $13.38 for like two games. I can't see how much money is being made. I obviously don't know because I don't sit behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But when they have these 50% off sales and these 40% off sales and they're selling games for 30, 40%, they're still turning a profit. So I'm really interested to know what exactly is that break-even cost if mm-hmm. they're able to start selling games, you know, a year later, 6 months or a year later at this 30, 40, 50% discount bargain. I mean, if there is that 50%, you know, markup on for profit, God forbid we give the EAs and the Activisions the ability to reprice and price on their own. I mean, yeah. Right now people complain because, oh, well, you know, I got the Taken King or not Taken King for like, but we paid, you know, $15, $20 for, you know, the House of Wolves, for example. I'm just going to use Destiny because obviously I'm a fanboy.
Yeah, guys, he's a fanboy.
And plus, come on, it wouldn't be an episode of GTR if we didn't bring it up Destiny, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But think of it. If 50% is their break even and they're already charging you $60 for that game, that means that game is only $30, right? So if you give EA or any of these major conglomerates an opportunity to get more money, they're going to price it at $70, $75, $80. Remember the big flip on everybody when we went from $49, $45 to $50 for a game. Next gen automatically required an extra $10 to buy games. Mm. Why? If that break-even point is still 50%, make the deal, make it cheaper for the people. And then you notice there's no real price difference for when people buy it digitally or when people buy it physical. That I think is the bigger travesty. You don't have to worry about paper or plastic or design or any of that other stuff. Why should people be paying the same price for the same product digital versus physical? That's the bigger argument.
And it keeps people out of the places like GameStop turning around and selling their game. And then that, the second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, thousandth owner, they don't get a dime to the developer publisher at that point. That is all internal money for the used game system. And, you know, a lot of people really take sides on that issue. But if you want to help a developer and they're willing to sell their game at 50 to 60 to 75% off, they clearly want you on their side. They want you to feel like you are getting a good value for your money. They don't want you to feel like you're being ripped off or you're having to make a big decision like, oh, I just don't know if that's worth 60. I mean, I'm better off trading in some older games and getting that used, you know, $54.99 copy that someone traded in within a week. And then none of your money is going to developer. So, you know, even though you saved $5, in the long run, you're hurting the industry as a whole. And I'm not trying to be preachy at all because I've certainly took plenty advantage of used games throughout my life. But going forward, you know, as the industry is continually grows and grows and grows, I want to see more developers make it big. You know, I don't want, you know, small teams to be limited to feel like they can only make, you know, 8-bit platformers. You know, I want them to feel like, you know, we can license the Unreal Engine 4. We can license the CryEngine. There's a lot of tools out there. You don't have to make your own game from scratch. There's a lot of tools available to you to make the things you want to make. So now the limit is on your imagination, your design ability, your artistic ability, your programming ability. That should be the wall that you have to push past, not the corporate BS, the red tape, you know, the licensing issues, all that stuff. I want to remove as many barriers as possible so that people can grow up to have a realistic dream of, I want to make games when I grow up. And they don't have that realization. It's like, oh man, this is a lot more difficult to get into than I thought. It needs to be more inclusive. It needs to bring more people in. So then you have those, you know, who knows when the next Miyamoto is going to show up? You know, who knows when the next Kojima is going to show up? You know, things, people, Ken Levine, people like that, the visionaries, the people that make us go, we point at them and go, look, this is our Spielberg. You know, this is our Citizen Kane kind of stuff. We are just as much as an art form as anything else on the planet. And in a lot of cases, we're more fun for the most part, too. That's what I think we need to push. We need to get more people interested in supporting the industry, and because that motivates those kids to, you know, go to school and be like, I want to make games. I know I can do that now. All these doors are open for me. I just had to take advantage of it. So I'm all for more independent developers.
Another thing too, Pete, like the reason why a lot of these companies are having, let's say, these games that they're having it for cheap. Like, for example, The Last Tomb Raider, you could either get it for free or get it really, really cheap online or different stores. And the reason why they're doing that is because that's a great way for them to push the next game that's coming out.
Exactly.
And hype it up. Or like Mirror's Edge. Now the new Mirror's Edge is coming out sometime, hopefully next year. You know, why not get the older Mirror's Edge for $5, $10, buy it for your console, play it, and now you're excited, you like it. And at the same time, the companies that, the publishers that release those games, they could get some type of income by releasing it for cheap. But the main thing is push the new games that's coming out in the future. You know, so I think that's a great idea. It's a great way to promote your product that's coming out. So, okay, well, screw you then, Pete.
4-3.
Yeah. All right, so we have another question here. This is from Zod. Wow, this is like a very angry email. He's like, hey, Gamertag Radio crew, do you think it's right for big gaming websites to award publishers like WB with Game of the Year, knowing that they release two completely broken games? I believe that he's talking about Batman and also Mortal Kombat X. For one platform for a full $60 and then nothing to compensate those who bought the game day one, like me and Paris. I don't care if the game is good or not, but awarding games like Batman or Mortal Kombat, it's wrong. If you keep awarding broken games, then the trend of releasing broken games on PC will never stop. Please share your opinion on this matter. Thank you. P.S. Please don't nominate or give Batman or any Game of the Year awards. If Gamertag Radio Crew gives an award, then I will never listen to GTR again and also uninstall the podcast app permanently.
Oh, man.
He sounds very angry, man.
Very passionate about that Arkham City.
You need to go play some Destiny.
I'm sorry.
You need to go play some Destiny, play a better game. And honestly, you know, and you know, I might take some flack for this, but you know, Arkham Knight, possibly worst game of the year.
I don't know.
Is that a category now? Do we have worst games of the year now?
I don't know.
That's like a new category.
I can't find a worse game, worst major release than that.
It was rough. But I think for me,
that's just my personal opinion. But hey, you know,
not the worst game. Not the worst game, but it was okay.
I think as long as they fix it, and not in the amount of time they took to fix Arkham Knight, it was entirely too long. But if you can fix your game within a month that it comes out, I mean, that should take some of the pressure off, because game development is hard.
And
you can never do enough QA testing until you give it to millions of people, and they find all that crap that you didn't even know was in your game. And you're like, oh, wow, our game is broken as hell. get back to the drawing board, immediately fix this. And then, you know, they get punished because, you know, people are so reactionary. We as gamers just, we're so reactionary to things. We respond immediately to what it's like at launch, even though pretty much anything that comes out at launch is going to have issues of some kind, especially something digitally or as an online component. And I'm not excusing them at all. It's wrong to, you know, to knowingly, like they did in Batman's case, release a product they knew was screwed. They should have kept it under wraps, made the PC version, finish it, then release it separately. But, you know, that the investors and the shareholders, unfortunately, have way too much say in these decisions. And, you know, bled to them because, you know, they're not hardcore gamers. So, you know, meh. For us, I think it's important that we support the developers that we can trust and that prove to us, people like CD Projekt Red that can prove to us they can make a game, they can support it after launch. They make you go, oh, wow, I only know a little bit about your new project, you know, like Cyberpunk, but I automatically want it given your track record. That we want that kind of passionate devotion to developers, but they have to do the work. And they have, I think I've said this before, the whole thing is QA test your games like a mother. Spend more money than you think you should on QA testing to guarantee you minimize this as much as possible. Because, I mean, Fallout 4 is going to be amazing. We all agree on that. It's going to be buggy as hell when it comes out for, like, the first week until they get some patches out.
The Witcher was buggy when it came out.
Every game's buggy when it comes out. But, you know, the people that are on the ball, you know, the game goes gold. Immediately they go back to the drawing board. And they're like, all right, let's get a patch. Let's get a day one update available for the gamer. As soon as they plug it in, we fix the majority of their game breaking problems, and then we take their feedback after that bit by bit and be like, oh, we didn't even know that was an issue. Let's go in and fix that side quest, or let's go in and fix that monster encounter, things like that. That's why I trust certain developers and will follow them more willingly, and you won't be so cautious to be like, well, I was burned last time. I'm not so sure about this next game from them. But if you show me that you're willing to put the time and manpower and, you know, the money where your mouth is to prove that, you know, you treat us seriously, you know, we're your fans. You're making these games for us. You're a business. Absolutely. You're making money. But if you just treat us as just dollar signs that, you know, once you push that game out the door, you're done. You move on to the next thing. You're not going to last long in this industry.
That's why I always say, do your research before buying a game. Forget about the hype.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's going to hurt all of us. Companies are going to take advantage. So you got to be smart and, you know, do research or wait a couple of days. And then based on the feedback that you see from your friends or those podcasts or websites, whatever, you know, then you should decide, okay, should I buy this game? Let me go for it, you know? So
unless it's Destiny.
Okay, next question. this is a feedback. This is from Omar. Shout out to Omar. Thanks for the email. Hey, Gamertag Radio, just wanted to thank you again for giving your fans a second episode 2 weeks in a row. I think your plans to expand on your thoughts on a game or what's going on in the gaming industry would be greatly appreciated by your fans. I know we all have busy lives and sometimes crazy work schedules, so bringing us a second weekly episode isn't always easy. So once again, thank you. Shout out to Omar, and his gamertag is Elite Mad Skills on PlayStation Network and Xbox. So P, I believe he said for you to add him too, so you could play Destiny.
Did he respond back? Because I told him to, I said to add me. I gave him my gamertag XPRockX.
I haven't heard anything. Maybe it's your email. He probably doesn't like
it. Or maybe he's like Paris. He's a scumbag. Doesn't like when people put X's in their names and stuff.
All right. So we're going to take a short break. And once we come back, we're going to read a couple more emails or voicemails. And then our review of Rock Band 4. So we'll be right back after this. All fan mail edition.
This is Gamer Tag Radio. Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
This summer has been a very, very busy time for us. And that's why I love to look presentable. Like when we went to E3, I took my Harry's product, shaved over there. And I went to the events. I went to press conferences, all that. Even during podcast movement, you know, I had a big moment with the Hall of Fame award and everything, and I had to look presentable. That's why I love Harry's. Harry's.com was started by two guys who were passionate about creating a better shaving experience. And that's what I use to look smooth. I shave a couple times a week. And let me tell you, ever since I've been using this product, I love it. My skin is very, very smooth, quality, feels legit. Say goodbye to choosing between an expensive brand and say hello to Harry's. High quality blades at a price you will love. Go to harrys.com right now and enter code GTR at checkout to get $5 off your first purchase. Get a month worth of shaving for just $10 with code GTR at checkout. That's harry.com, promo code GTR.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
Fan mail.
Yeah, I was waiting for B to do that. All right, so we're back here, Gamer Tag Radio, episode 508. You guys having fun? This is pretty fun, right?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
I love it. Random questions, so cool, man. So, Boss, we have let's go with two or three more voicemails, and I think we're done with all fan mail edition. But pick another one that I want you to be the DJ here and decide which one you want.
All right, cool. Let me put my headphones sideways and hold them with one hand.
You gotta put your hands up.
And yep. You need a name. You need a name too. You need a name. You can't just do that with no name. Like Pete, what was your name when you used to be a DJ?
Oh God, Liquid Matrix and
Liquid. Liquid, really? That was your name? DJ. Why Liquid?
Liquid, because my mixes were smooth, man. They were just like,
oh, flow. God.
Tracks would flow right into the next, but you wouldn't even know.
You know, you want to hear something funny? When I used to DJ, this is like when I just started DJing. My DJ name was DJ Original. It was the cheesiest name I ever heard in my life. But yeah, that was my name.
I'm going to go to the drawing board. I'm going to come back with a name next week.
You should.
This is happening.
DJ right. Kaji. There you go.
All right. So what's the next question, voicemail wise?
Let's see.
Let's do Steven. Let's play Steven.
All right, let's play the voicemail right now.
Hey, Godfrey, how you doing? This is Steven from Philadelphia. Never done this before, but I'm calling you because I have a little beef about this Fallout 4 Pip-Boy edition. The small window frame that they gave out to pick up the Pip-Boy was like maybe like 2 minutes. I'm trying to figure out if nobody's commenting on that small window that they did as far as getting the version of the Pip-Boy. Also, I'm in my 50s. I've been playing video games since the original Coleco and the original Pong. And I have a question for you. That's number two. I had a video game system that came out right after the Coleco Pong, and it was just basically two motorcycle bars, and all you did was jump cars. If you can you find out the name of that system, please? Thanks for taking my call. Keep you up to good work. Thank you.
All right. Who can answer that question?
All right. First, I want to address the Fallout 4 Pip-Boy Edition problem that he's got.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of a limited edition bundle. You know, if that's something you really want and you know about it, you're going to put that alert on your phone that says, anytime some news pops up about Pip-Boy, you let me know because I want in. Apparently, your desire to obtain the Fallout 4 Pip-Boy edition was not strong enough for you to do something like that.
Therefore,
you lost on your opportunity to get a Pip-Boy. I even have a guy at my office, at my job, that bugged me about, whoa, when's that Pip-Boy edition going to come out? As soon as it came out, it was sold out everywhere. I think it was 2 days later, they put it back up for sale they put more Pip-Boys up, and he actually nailed one down at Target and has one that he can now come home and bring it to his kid.
So but he worked on it.
He put in the hustle, and you put in the hustle, you reap the rewards. So, Steven, apologies. I'm not trying to knock your hustle, but maybe you need to put more time and effort into obtaining that with which you want, aka a Pip-Boy, or you can hit up eBay and pay top dollar for it. I will have them up on eBay for like $650 if you want. That's when the bidding starts.
All right, let me be the angel on the other side of Steven's shoulder real quick, because you got these two devils over here. I can relate to what Steven's saying. I kind of think that this whole concept of the limited edition pre-order stuff has gotten a little insane, because it pretty much is limited to the ultimate collectors, the people that are on the internet, you know, right there as it happens. You know, I remember
breathing on the screen, just
reload F5, that kind of stuff. And like, you know, a lot of people have work, social lives, you know, they're married, they have kids, they have a lot of things that they distract them. So maybe if they want to go home and check Amazon and be like, oh, there's a Pip-Boy edition, oh, it's already sold out. That's stupid. I can completely understand that. I mean, I stopped buying collector's editions of games kind of for that reason. I mean, it's just kind of the point of either it was a stupid tin case with, you know, an art book, or it was that crazy concept of I had to be almost like, you know, camping out on my computer ready as soon as it went live. And to me, that just wasn't worth it. I just want to play the game and move on. And I'll admit, when they announced the Pip-Boy edition at E3, you know, I was there. I was like, oh, wow, that's really, really cool. I'd love to try that. But I know it's not for me because I just, that's not my thing anymore. But I feel bad for people that legitimately, you know, don't follow gaming, you know, to the second, minute, hour like we do and hear about this stuff after the fact. And by the time they hear about it, it's too late. If anything, I wish the companies would be better with the messaging and be more clear of like, look, that's initial run when we announce it. This is for the hardcore. We're going to go ahead and give you a heads up. We're going to have more of them available, maybe in a month or so. You can give a rough timeline frame of like when these people should expect to throw their money at this.
But you guys, but you don't know.
It's pre-order culture.
But you don't know what their strategy is. A lot of the times they do that. You know, it's, you know, 2 weeks or 1 week right before the launch of the product. Oh, all of a sudden we've got some additional product now that we've just found in the back of the warehouse that nobody knew. But we knew about it. We're just trying to drive up the price and drive up demand and hype. Because God knows, I mean, up until like, what is it like? Was it November 4th, I think, is when it launches or whatever? Nobody really has an eye on Fallout until... or not, and it's not just Fallout, it's, you know, specific, but most games that have an early announcement, right after that announcement, the desire and the hype falls down until something pops up, with, you know, a month or two, because I think, what was it? Levine just had a talk, and now everybody's talking Fallout 4 again. So... Mm-hmm. It's supply, demand, and marketing.
Yeah,
that's how this country works on everything.
You're right. So, you're right. I guess here's my solution because I don't think you can give. For me, I'm not going to give an opinion without a solution. For my solution to that problem is you have an initial launch lineup for the hardcore that follow it religiously, and then you go ahead and make the announcement. We will have a certain limited number of these available that we're only going to sell the day the game comes out. So
they don't
if
need,
you want
they
it,
don't need,
the day that
I think
comes
that's
out,
not smart. Sorry,
go,
I disagree.
Go camp out for it. Because then you know that you have that backup option. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
You know what it is, Pawson? By you mentioning numbers, how many copies you have?
No, you don't say numbers. You just say, you use the exact words I just said. We have a very limited available amount that will be available at launch day. You need, and it's not a pre-order thing, it's just like, we're going to ship them to the store that day. You need to be one of the first people there when the store opens at midnight or when they open in the morning to get it. And I know that would piss GameStop off tremendously because they want your money. You know, they want to make interest off of your money that you're stored up before the thing comes out. But, you know, that to them, because that's not fair to the casual people. Because there are people that are, you know, not hardcore gamers that still like to collect stuff, and they shouldn't be punished.
I agree.
Because they're not camping out on the internet and following religiously of what the developer is announcing. I mean, I think that just it just makes more sense for large, you know, not saying small game studios, but any large AAA game that's going to have a fancy collector's edition, you know, give the people the idea, the hope, if you will, that, you know, if you really want it, treat it like Black Friday. Just go camp out for it.
I think you could do this. Go to your nearest local retail store, either Best Buy, Toys R Us, you know, and ask them, hey, is it possible for me to pre-order this? Maybe they have a certain amount of copies. Maybe they only have like 2 or 3 per store. Do your research. And hey, if you have to go a little bit farther, like, hey, 45 minutes away from your area, do it. Do the research and find out. I think you don't have to only pre-order online. I mean, that's the easiest way. But if you really want this, I think you can make it happen, man. I think it's still a chance for you to get it. It's just going to be a little bit difficult, you know? So, yeah.
If anything,
a lot
Steven,
of driving.
Steven, I wish you luck. I hope you can get one, and I hope you don't have to resort to eBay. Because it's a cool device. Solution. I'm jealous. I kind of wish I had one. But, you know, for me, I just kind of want the game. I want to play it. But, you know, if I see somebody that has it, I'm like, oh, man, that's cool. Let me check that out. But I'm still going to use the phone app. you know, if anything, I can just duct tape my phone to my wrist, and then it's kind of the same thing. Just ghetto.
Wow, that is so.
Just don't take it off.
So ghetto. It sounds so ghetto. Now, so ghetto. Very quick, I know at the end of his voicemail, he mentioned about ColecoVision.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go ahead and play my reverse age card. I usually play it the opposite direction. So, you know, as the millennial Generation Y kid here, I have no idea what you were trying to describe. I have seen a ColecoVision. I know they exist, but they might as well be in a museum because I started with the NES and everything past that. I'm with you on NES, but like the old stuff, you know, Danny, Pete, you got any ideas? You guys were
the only
kids
thing
one
I can
day.
Think of back then, maybe Motocross Racer. But I can't remember if it's what you described. Try looking it up on YouTube, see if maybe there's some gameplay on there and see if that matches up. Hopefully that helps, and hopefully it soothes some of the burn I tried to give you on that Fallout 4 failure there. But
or maybe a listener that,
or yeah, somebody that's listening can maybe pick up on that.
Yeah, if any of you guys that are listening to the show knows this question, please let us know. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or give us a call, 76-273-7GTR, and we'll definitely play it. Let's help him out. Let's do this little research, man, and find out. Okay. So what, another voicemail, Patrick? One more, because I think we gotta
play the last one is from Jacob, and it is about, you guessed it, Destiny. Play it.
Destiny again. All right, so let's play it right now. Let's play it right now.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Jacob giving you guys a call from Charlotte, North Carolina. First and foremost, just wanted to say, once again, huge fan. I love the show. I just heard you guys are thinking about doing 2 episodes per week. I definitely support it. This is my favorite podcast. I listen to it every Monday, so having an extra one to listen to on Thursdays would be fantastic. This message, though, basically mainly for Paris. I just wanted to say a big thank you to Paris for 2 reasons. One, his excitement really had me get back into the Taken King. Destiny, as the Taken King was released. So I've been playing a lot of that. Finally made it up to like level 40. Got my light level up quite a bit. Also wanted to thank him for just being very welcoming to his fans, because I'm a big fan of the podcast once again, but actually got to play with him a little bit the other day as part of the raid that they were going through. I just randomly jumped into the raid group. They were very welcoming about it, let me play with them. It took me a while to get to where they were going through the jumping puzzles, about 100 and whatnot. But I was Upper Room AK on there, though, so that was me with him in the raid group. You may remember we were trying to do the two sisters, witches type limit. We were learning that process, but just going through that process, that really got me loving the game quite a bit, because that's what I believe the social aspect of that's where the social aspect of Destiny really shines. Not really just already knowing what you're doing through a raid, but just trying to learn the basics of it with the group of people when nobody really knows what they're doing, but you have your Destiny Sherpas that are walking through it and walking through the strategies on it. It's really the best of multiplayer gaming online. I'm not really a big fan of the Crucible. I love just, you know, the PvE aspect of Destiny. But once again, just a big thank you to Paris for, you know, letting me tag along with it. And once again, big fan of you guys. Keep up the great, great work.
I have to admit, I've been playing Destiny Taken King for a while now.
Church.
I like it. It's a lot. Now I see myself back in the game. Now, why I went back was because the interview that Paris had with Deej about Destiny Year 1, and of course they talked about a little bit about what's coming for Year 2 and all that stuff. So it got me excited. So now I started playing it once I got back from New York City, and I love it now because the leveling system is easier. There's so many things to do now, like quest-wise. Like, I feel it reminds me a lot of Phantasy Star. Instead of just, you know, with the Year 1 stuff, leveling was a pain in the butt. And I just got tired of the whole grinding stuff, man. There is grinding here still in the game, but it's not as crazy as when the game came out for the first time, you know. And the cool thing is now, finally, hopefully this weekend or one of these days, I'm going to get together with Pete and the crew, Brian and everybody, and hopefully I could play my first time playing Raid with everybody.
Yeah, so I think the projection was Saturday.
Yes.
This week, hopefully, because yes. I know some of the people that we're playing with aren't going to be in town or back home.
That's fine. So, that's fine. You know what it is, Pete? I want to enjoy this. Like, I don't want to feel like pressure, like, oh, I already know this level, but let's, Godfrey, it's taking forever to find out. Because, you know, you guys have been playing this for a while now, and I'm going back now. Like, I'm starting fresh. So this is all new.
And we're starting from, we're doing Vault of Glass. Then we're going to be doing the Crota Raid. That would build you up, give you some perspective and an understanding of what we went through. Because, and you know what? This is actually kind of similar to, you know, to Paris going through the raid now, but he's going in blind. Danny's going to be going in blind as well. But, you know, we're going to have, you know, my experienced crew, the A team, Paris, you know, helping Danny out and letting him experience this as much as he can firsthand in a somewhat blind scenario as well. We'll be there for support, but we're going to let him try to drive, you know, we're going to let him drive the Destiny Mobile for the raids.
And please, guys, no kicking me out, please, because he is well known for that. He is well known to kick me out many times.
Get your light level up, man. If you ain't
level,
get your level up, man. Put in work. Do work, son. Do work.
So now let's answer the question. I know we took so long to. Pete, you want to answer this question?
What's the question?
It wasn't a question. It was just thanking Paris for raid with him.
Yeah, see? Yeah, it was just Destiny. That's all you had to say. Boom.
Boom. Okay. So you just say Destiny and we'll just create content around that.
We're in. All day.
Right there for 40 minutes just talking about it, man, you know? So, all right. So, guys, we're going to play this review that I recorded with my brother about Rock Band 4. We've been playing this now for a couple days, so actually more than a week. And, man, it's pretty good. So check it out, and we'll be right back after this.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're now going to be reviewing Rock Band 4 for the Xbox One, and also it's out for the PlayStation 4. This is your host, Danny, a.k.a. Godfrey, and I also have a special guest here, old school GTR member. Actually, he's my brother, Nano. Nano, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? This is Daniel, not Danny, the other one. My name is Nano 551. If you guys have any idea of who I am, old crew member, and just back because this game is awesome.
You know, we've been playing a lot of Rock Band 4, but before that, we used to play a lot of like Guitar Hero. Also, you had drums for the Guitar Hero, right? That's like your favorite part of the game, right?
I mean, like, my favorite instrument to play would be the drums, just because, you know, it's a little more, I want to say, challenging. But, you know, I love the guitar. That's obviously the first instrument that came out. But, no, the drums are the best part, and that's what I really played on Guitar Hero. So it was my go-to instrument all the time.
Well, for those that don't know much about Rock Band, from Rock Band 1 all the way to 4... is developed by my favorite developers out there, Harmonix. So I had this on the Xbox 360, and I purchased a lot of songs previously on the older games. And now with this, the good thing about Rock Band 4 is I could re-download the songs that I purchased before. And another thing that's pretty cool too is that this game comes with 60 songs automatically. And there's 1,500 in total from Rock Band 1 all the way to now Rock Band 4. That's pretty cool, right?
Honestly, when the store was available, I saw the intense library that it has, and it's a little mind blowing when you start to think about you know, the price of these songs. And like, honestly, they're well priced. If you want an album, I think it ranged between $15 or $20. Yeah, like $19.99 was the average price. For a full album, that's not bad, but there's so much music. There really is. Like, it's 1,500 songs available to download, and you have to have deep pockets, man. Like, the game itself, it does bring good music, but the good thing about it, unlike Guitar Hero, having that choice to re-download all the songs that you purchased from Rock Band 1, 2, and 3, that's an amazing thing. And it really does expand your library if you don't want to really dump too much money into it right away.
But let's talk about the instruments, because I was curious, man, is it going to be the same design? Is it going to be a little bit different? Let's go first with the drums. The drums, I notice now the design is a little bit different. It seems more legit than the previous one, because I felt like the kick pedal, that part was plastic when it first came out, the first Rock Band. Now this one is well designed as metal. It's a lot better now, right?
It's definitely more, it's better reinforced, the kick pedal. I would say the pads are more responsive. With the first Rock Band, I was never a big fan. That's why I kind of like gravitated towards Guitar Hero, just because it didn't feel like it really responded to you hitting the notes. And there was a latency in the response time of the pads that it didn't connect, and the song didn't feel natural. Like, this one feels really good. Like, right off the bat, you know, like I jumped the gun and I jumped straight into hard, but it wasn't hard to get into it. You know, like the first song, you know, you'd have to get the rhythm back because it's been such a long time since you play one of these music games, but it felt great. Like the buttons on the guitar, the pads on the drums, even like to the mic and the vocals, everything feels so fluid, and it's a better experience this time around.
The best part, minus the mic, everything is wireless. There's no more cables and stuff. Now, if you have the older instruments, you could purchase the game separately, like in the store, so you could download the actual digital version and buy an adapter, which you could connect your older instruments from the previous game, and it also will work too, which is great, in my opinion, you know, if you want to save money. If not, you want to try the new ones, I believe it's $249 for the drum, guitar, and mic and game. And if you just want the guitar and the game, that one is going to be $149. So I think it's worth it if you do want to go, you know, all next gen, you know, brand new instruments and everything, man, too. So now, gameplay wise, they added a couple new features. I like the guitar solo, really, really, really cool. I didn't really understand it at first, but once you get the hang of it, and you go crazy, you get a lot of points, and that will help you also get more points for you and your band and stuff, man.
As for the drums, they did change the the drum fill section, just because you know, naturally, not everybody that picks this game is gonna be a drummer or a professional drummer, and that's the one instrument in the game where you have to develop some sort of rhythm, and it will lead you into playing real drums eventually. Like if you really do feel like you're getting good at the game, buy yourself a real drum set, you know? It does open that world up to you. They do have better drum solos now where, you know, for drum fills, a lot of people don't know what a good fill sounds like. And it's hard to like really just naturally know boom, 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 like all those like hits. And in this game, they give you pre-arranged fills, so you feel like a real drummer and it'll always sound good. Then again, you could, if you want to freestyle it, you can go back to the options, and under the drum option, you could set it to the old school Rock Band where it was just, you know, you do it yourself. So I think that's a cool feature, you know, for people that aren't too musically inclined, you know, you have that option to freestyle it yourself or go with the game, which is always going to give you a good sound.
All right. There is the new feature too, that you could, let's say your party mode, you could get everybody, your friends and stuff in the band. You could join the band. You're like, let's say you have a party at home, karaoke night, your friends could join in, not interrupt the song. They could jump in or drop out whenever they want and continue playing, which is cool. And I like the voting, that you could vote the type of songs that you want before it goes to the next song. And let's say all of us, we have different choices. We pick different choices, or we could pick more to see what other songs are available in that set list. And once you pick, it randomly would choose one, and you continue with the game like that. That's pretty cool. I never seen that in a previous Rock Band stuff, man. Rock Band games.
My favorite thing about this game is, no matter what instrument you pick, whether it's, you know, you're playing the guitar, bass, if you're gonna play the drums, or just grab the mic and go nuts and start singing, like you have fun with each item, with every instrument. Like it's not a boring experience. They give you so much range and a freedom, like, to just have fun with the game. And I think, like, even like I grabbed the mic for a while, for a few songs actually, and as you can tell, I have a beautiful voice, but it's, you know, it's pretty forgiving on hitting the notes, because nobody can hit some of those notes that the rock bands have or like vocalists hit. But it's fun, you know. It's, you get a really awesome like catalog of music, and you could just have fun with every instrument, from guitar, which is the original instrument for all these music games, to the drums, which is a little more difficult, probably the most out of all, and the voice, the vocalist part, which is with the microphone. That it's all fun, you know, and it's a game that, like, it's great for a big group. If you're playing by yourself, if you wanna, you know, just jam out, or by yourself or with friends, you know, it's something that it's easy to pick up and people will love it right away.
Let's talk about the songs. The songs, one song that surprised me, that I was not expecting that song to be difficult, was an Elvis Presley song. Do you remember the name of that one?
Oh man, no, the Elvis song. I think we have the list here. The Elvis song was just weird. Like the tempo was all off, for me at least. And I'm not a big country guy, but like I said, you don't have a bad time playing any of this music. All right, the song, the Elvis Presley song, is "Suspicious Minds." I personally don't know a lick about Elvis. Like, aside from him eating peanut butter and jelly with bananas and bacon, like, I don't think I know anything about the guy. But the music is fun, and they have a really good catalog, and they picked awesome music for this game.
Yeah, what about the songs that got your attention the most, that you never heard of, or songs that you do like? Because you play a lot of drums, and you're playing it hard. So how was it, those particular songs that you like, from drum-wise?
I'm not a huge fan of like the really poppy rock, like Fall Out Boy, or, you know, other songs. All right, okay, a perfect example: Fall Out Boy, U2. I'm not a huge fan, but again, it's fun to play it. Like, you might not listen to it in your car, but once you get into it and you start hitting those notes and playing the song and playing along with the rhythm, you fall in love with the music. And I think this game really it does a good job of expanding on what the original music genre of video games does, and it involves you into the music.
I know right now we're playing this part of the game. We're on tour, going to different cities, playing. I love the crowd pleaser. Like, the people were like, "Hey, encore, come on, play another song." You pick another song if you want to get more fans, or you have a choice. You could get more money. So here's the thing. Throughout the whole game, you have a choice. Like, there was one part of the game that you meet this like a fashion blogger, and she's gonna give you like great outfits for your the band and stuff. And the thing is, it's gonna help you money wise to get more money, but at the same time, you will lose a lot of fans. Or go in the indie, worry about getting more fans and not worry much about getting the money. So you have a choice at least. So it's pretty cool. Or maybe a manager. You probably will get a manager, and he will tell you have to play these type of songs at the show. Or you rather do that, or pick another one. That this is my favorite part, is forget about what he wants, let what the crowd wants, and that will help you also get more fans and stuff. But Nana was more into the let me get more money because I want to fix my character, or get better instruments, or fix the whole band up, you know, get a better car or something like that, right?
Honestly, I'm going to tell you straight up, if I was a rock star, I would sell out the minute I got one fan. I'd sell for the money. Screw it. I'm going to play whatever the corporate America wants me to play. And it's just, that's my route. But Godfrey was really into getting fans and going the underground route, which is understandable. And honestly, it was fun because we argued for a few seconds. And, you know, you have to pick a side. And once you pick it, you know, you still play the same music, but it's fun to like take your band on that trip and go through that like mini adventure of, you know, you do it for the love of the music, or you do it for the money. Money.
He's like, money. Now, another part of the game that I like too is that Harmonix, they're planning to add a lot of new features in the future. You know, a lot, supposedly they're going to be releasing one next month and a couple other more like in the future. This is going to be multiplayer features, social features. So that's cool. Harmonix is really looking at this game as like, we're going to go all out, and they're going to have a lot of new stuff. And they're going to be also adding new songs in the future too for DLC. So I know we were talking about 1500. They're going to have a way more than 1500, you know? So, and it doesn't matter which version you buy, the PlayStation 4 or Xbox One version is still fun for the whole family. Great thing if you want to get together a group of friends at the house, you know, beers, and you just enjoy it, man. Enjoy it. Pick your songs, you know, and it's great. I highly recommend it for the holidays, especially, man, for the family, you know?
Oh, no. Like, honestly, if you're planning on buying this as a gift for the holidays, this has got to be number one on your list. Like, this game is fun for everybody. It's one that involves, you know, the entire family. It's and it's fun. Like, if you want your kid to be more into music and just learn more about rock and roll and like hear some good music, then this is a good way to get him into it, because it involves them with video games and like classic rock that you like to listen to, or music that they wouldn't really pick up on the radio, that like you don't find it anymore, you know. And it's from like bands like Avenged Sevenfold to Elvis Presley, you know. You have such a wide range of music in this game, and it's awesome. You know, it's fun. It involves everyone, and it just hits every good point of what music is.
I know there was one part that you were talking about to me behind right before we started recording about the drums and the future that we're adding some stuff for the drums. Very quick, you want to say that before we wrap it up?
Like I said, I'm a big drum advocate, and that's the instrument that I drive to the most in these games. My big thing was the Ion drum kit. It's something that like previous Rock Band and Guitar Hero games had, where the Ion drum kit is more of a like a MIDI drum set. It's a more expanded version of the drums that come with Rock Band. You know, there's cymbal pads, more drum pads, there's double kicks. You could customize the drums a little more, and it's a bigger drum set for your game. It's not compatible yet with the game, but they're working on it. And I believe that it will be compatible soon. So if you do have an Ion drum kit and you know you were looking forward to playing with it, not yet, not at launch, but I think Harmonix is working on it, and they should be making it available soon. So it's a release and update, I guess. But they do have the cymbal package. So you could buy extra cymbals and add them onto your drums to expand the drum set. And then you could play Pearl drums, which makes it a lot more fun, and it makes it more of a realistic feeling.
All right. So I think we'll wrap it up, guys. And this is our review of Rock Band 4 for the Xbox One. Head over to GamerTagRadio.com or play.it for more information about GTR and other episodes of GTR. We're out. Thanks, Nano. All right, so we're going to wrap it up. Pete, Patrick, I think this is a great first episode of Strictly Fan Mail. Voicemails and emails. That was pretty awesome, right? It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
We get so much good content on a daily basis, and I feel like now that we've opened up this second channel for that, it's going to come even more. And it's going to come even better. Even more higher quality questions, comments, feedbacks. I'm really excited because we have so many cool listeners out there with such unique perspectives on gaming that we don't even think of, because you know we're doing our own thing, but they're seeing a completely different light. And I love that. That's the fair thing about gaming, is how each person approaches a game, or you know, approaches, you know, a gaming experience. It's just, that to me is the fun of video games, is playing with other people, because everybody plays games differently. And, you know, when you combine that, you have magical things like Destiny that make you want to play games, because you know, that's the thing. It's just like, we have the best of both worlds now. We have these amazingly, incredibly cinematic story-based single-player games that just kick Hollywood right in the teeth, because they're so much better than most of the things Hollywood even puts out. And then we have these incredibly well-designed social experiences that, you know, we used to dream about back in the day, like when Xbox Live first came out, or even before that, when, you know, Dreamcast was online was a thing, like Daniel's talking about Phantasy Star. Yes. What we're able to accomplish now, oh my God, I can't even begin to describe how excited I am for the future of, you know, the social aspect of gaming, of, you know, gaming together as a community, you know, making new friends online. You know, that to me has always been my favorite part about online gaming, is just reaching out to people from all over the world and just getting a myriad of different experiences and making friends so easily, because you already have that common interest. You're already playing the same game, and boom, you just made a new friend just like that. I love it.
True, man. And I hope that, you know, now that we're doing these two episodes per week, I mean, every week, I want you guys, the listeners, to send us more content, send us more questions and feedback, and we'll read on the show. I think this will be great, you know? Yeah, I'm excited for that, man. So, Pete, anything else before we wrap it up?
No, man. I think it was good. And again, people, Feedback, feedback, feedback. Make us accountable. Make us better. Help us get better.
Yes. Right yes. On. And yeah. So we're going to wrap it up, guys. And up to next week, remember to head over to gamertagradio.com or play.it. Listen to our past episodes. Give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Fan mail at gamertagradio.com. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Share it with your friends. Go to iTunes, also Spotify, Stitcher, and all these other places. Even on your mobile app, if you have Pocket Cast, there's so many. TuneIn Radio, there's so many apps out there. But if you can, subscribe and post your review and share it. I think that's what will help us big time. And it's all up to you. You want more content? Send us your email, voicemail, and feedback, all right? Until next week, we are out. Take care. Peace. Peace.
You're listening to Gamer Tag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week.